Welcome to Conversations in Cannabis. Today we're sitting down with Sequoia Tuner, Vice President of Retail at Nevada-based cannabis company, The Source. This call was recorded over the phone on June 29th, 2023. Sequoia, again, wonderful to see you. Really appreciate you taking the time. I got to ask, because everybody loves to hear origin stories, especially with people that are dealing with such wonderful companies that are involved in the cannabis industry. You know, what was your initial drive to want to be a part of the cannabis industry?
Oh, that's a really good question. So I am the daughter of a vet. I have a very strong military presence in my family. So I did have an uncle out here who unfortunately was going through an illness and was in the VA system. And I'm sure you've heard kind of how difficult the VA system can be for vets to navigate. And at the time, Nevada was just going medical. So we started pursuing that actually as, you know, a source of relief for him for his ailment. And that's how I really got involved in the industry very early in the early days.
You know, obviously having that kind of touch with, especially with the medical side, I mean, Aaron kind of had the same thing with his grandmother. You know, when you're looking at having to deal with medical patients and kind of looking at the way that, you know, medical law was originally structured, do you feel like, especially for the VA, do you feel like our veterans are kind of getting the short end of the stick with federal legalization not having happened? I mean, obviously the VA really hasn't taken a hands-on approach to cannabis yet.
I do. And I'm going to be very, very honest. I have a father-in-law that's a vet that, you know, has gone through cancer now twice. My own father has gone through cancer, you know, once and is a vet also. And was living in Arkansas and living in states in which there was no medical program at the time. I will be very honest, and I probably should not say this. I was helping my dad by driving from Nevada to Arkansas and giving him Rick Simpson oil. And it was game changer for him through his chemo treatments, making sure that he was still had a quality of life while fighting cancer. And so I 100% agree that unfortunately the VA really has dropped the ball with our vets and making sure that they have a comprehensive treatment that isn't dependent on pharmaceutical medicine and gives them an alternative form of treatment that is, in a lot of cases, easier to accept for them physically. A lower cost option, more accessible, and I honestly think it's a shame.
Well, I mean, looking at kind of how your career has progressed since, you know, getting involved in the cannabis industry and kind of seeing how you kind of made your way to The Source, how did you initially get involved with The Source?
Funny enough, I was on the other side. So I was a competitor of The Source for a really long time out here operating dispensaries and honestly, was probably their number one competitor. I took a little break from the Nevada market, opened dispensaries in the South, so Arkansas, Missouri, Oklahoma, before returning to the Nevada market. And at the time, knew I wanted to join an organization that had a great culture of how they treat their employees. And that's how I ended up with The Source.
Well, and looking, you know, having somebody who's been involved in different markets, it kind of helps you get a really good perspective. You know, seeing how different markets operate, looking at, say, Nevada versus the medical markets that you've seen in the other states, what do you think other markets are getting right and wrong? And what do you think Nevada has adopted that you believe is the correct approach? And what do you think Nevada could be doing a little bit better?
Ooh, that's a great question. I can touch on what I think is wrong, which I think a lot of the marketing parameters that medical states, you know, write into their regulations, I think are incorrect. It only serves to further demonize the plant instead of making it a focus in which you can spread education and awareness into the entirety of the market without, you know, targeting the under 21 crowd and things of that nature. And I know that's why a lot of those marketing regulations are written. And I think there are ways to write the regulation in which it can be adopted in a way that still allows us to reach patients in new markets and emerging markets without having the stigma of the devil's lettuce, to be honest.
The good old reefer madness.
That's right.
Nostalgia.
That's right. You know, and it's tougher in the southern states. Let's be honest. So.
Oh yeah, and I mean, there's been a lot of states that have come online that have definitely surprised me. When you're kind of looking at the way that some of these states are formulating, especially considering that you have, not an MSO background per se, but more of just a, you've just operated in different states through different organizations. When you're kind of looking at what the possibility of a federal roll-up could be for these states, do you think that, just again, for it's more from a personal opinion, do you think it's going to be more along the lines of like, I believe that we're going to leave it more states-based, state to state, or do you think that the federal government's going to try to create a roll-up program where they
No,
try to figure out what the best regulations are going to be?
I hope that they do not try to create a roll-up program. I do think it's a state issue, and I think the states, as you see more states come online with either a medical program or adult use, they are taking, a lot of feedback from operators in different states, regulatory boards in different states, and making sure that A, they are creating an environment that operators can be successful. I think that is maybe one thing that Nevada didn't quite consider is the ramifications on, daily operations for operators and being able to turn a profit in a very strict regulatory environment. And what I've seen in other states is that the regulatory boards are I'll just say a lot more collaborative with operators than the current model here in Nevada
Well,
because
and
they want them to be successful.
I kind of touched on that a little bit with Aaron as well. When you look at something like California, for instance, I've talked with people from the BCC or the DCC, at the state level. I've talked with people at the DCR, and in the Los Angeles region, notoriously very hands-off approach. When it comes to dealing directly with retailers, because they're afraid of kind of giving a precedent to one that could be exploited by another.
Yes.
Do you feel that there is a state where regulators are working a little bit better with operators and touching a little bit on Nevada? Obviously, when you guys first launched out, I know that there was the big debacle with like the alcohol companies and
Yes.
them wanting to be the transporters of cannabis. Do you feel like Nevada regulators are kind of on the right path, at least, that they're starting to go towards, figuring things out and saying, hey, this definitely doesn't work? Because I feel like they figured that out with the liquor stuff pretty quickly.
Yes, I do. I do. And I think the most recent legislation points to that of being a little bit more focused on the operators and making sure that it's an environment in which, they can be successful and they can grow and the industry as a whole can grow. I do see other states, I like the program coming out of New Jersey right now. I think there's a lot of open communication from both sides. And how they're building out the regs, the support that they're giving operators as operators are coming more and more online. I think what they did with their social equity program was, really great and moving in the right direction.
Well, and New Jersey is an interesting example. New Jersey and New York obviously have open consumption laws in the state where cannabis is treated like tobacco. Here in Las Vegas, especially, Nevada as a whole, notoriously anti-consumption.
Correct.
Nuwu having been the only social consumption lounge open because of, Indian right regulations and them being on a reservation. The state finally giving social licensing to a couple operators and looking like it's going to open up. Do you feel like social use in especially Clark County? I don't want to focus on really anywhere else in Nevada, but in Clark County, do you feel like social use regulations are going the right approach? Or would you have rather have seen something more along the lines of, say, New York or New Jersey, where it's like, we're Sin City, go hard, you know what I mean?
The operator in me would rather see something along the lines of New Jersey and New York, to be very, very honest. I do think it's a very, weird. It's very weird because on the one hand, the gaming and alcohol board here, have such a stronghold on some of these things. Just being very honest,
Of
and I think
course.
that has motivated a lot of the regulations around consumption here. There are a couple of things that I see the CCB doing, you know, possibly, you know, being a little bit more lenient about the HVAC systems for lounges and things of that nature, not making sure that they have to be on a completely separate system. I mean, that is an incredibly large expense to get a lounge open. So I do think it's moving in the right direction.
Well, what do you see the future of social consumption looking like in Clark County? I mean, obviously, very nightclub driven space, very, very party centric scene. You know, I feel like West Hollywood in Southern California really wanted to try for that Amsterdam-esque atmosphere. I don't feel like they've really reached it. Do you feel like social consumption will be kind of the new norm for Southern Nevada, and especially here in Clark County, or do you feel like it'll, you know, kind of be the way of where it is in other parts of the country, where it's kind of like, yeah, we're going to have little events here and there, but it's not really going to be kind of an economic driver for the brands?
I don't think in the next, I would say, 2 years, I don't think it's going to be a huge economic driver. I think it's going to take a little bit of time for that to just grow, for consumers to feel very comfortable in consuming in that environment. Right now, consumption has, I think for consumers, feels very private, or their own kind of social groups and cliques. My hope and what I think social consumption will turn into is more of, you know, the small kind of pub atmosphere, very small consumption lounges, not, you know, the very large entertainment complexes that I know a lot of groups are trying to aim for. I just don't think that's going to be a sustainable model.
Well, and definitely really anxious to see kind of how it rolls out. I know that you guys in particular, especially with your subsidiary Camp Brand, are working on kind of an ice cream product. I know, yes. Aaron had introduced me to the chefs and spoke a little bit on it yesterday, and how you guys kind of work with the CCB in figuring out how to make that regulatory product actually come to fruition. Do you see, you know, especially since you're so involved with retail, do you kind of see an expansion of product SKU bases kind of centered around social consumption as these social use lounges open up? Or do you feel like product diversification is going to be kind of more of the norm, and then social use lounges are going to try to kind of adapt what's available in the market towards their model?
I think what's going to happen is that they're going to try to adapt towards their model. Because, you know, it's tough, because right now the regulations require that everything's single use. And that is a very expensive endeavor for production teams and manufacturers. So it's going to be interesting. I do think that's going to limit the assortment that's available in lounges just because of the cost. And it's going to be a flower heavy consumption, you know, experiment lounge. Yes. Cause it's just easier.
Well, do you see regulators, I mean, considering, you know, what regulators kind of saw in the Nevada market initially when it rolled out, and kind of making adjustments from there, do you see the kind of the same thing maybe happening with social consumption laws, where, you know, they see products, you know, being forced one direction because of regulatory requirements, and it's simply stifling what that possibly could become? And so regulations might shift to allow more social lounge friendly products. Yes. Do you see that potentially happening?
I do. And I do see that happening. And I think there's going to be an increased focus on being able to train employees on, you know, identifying the signs of overconsumption, and, you know, making sure that A, consumers are having an enjoyable experience, but also are able to safely get back to their homes, their, you know, wherever they may be going.
Well, and when you're looking at the current retail layouts that you guys have, you know, do you feel like retail layouts will shift as these social consumption lounges kind of open up? Do you feel like, you know, brands or operators, I know Aaron had mentioned that you guys, you know, went for your license, your social consumption license. Do you feel like retail layouts will start to shift to kind of move people towards the social consumption lounges, or are they kind of going to be, separate in the sense that like people that are going to go to social consumption lounges, it's more like going to a restaurant. Like you're specifically there, you're going to purchase cannabis there, you're going to use cannabis there, versus you're going to go into the dispensary and then go into the social consumption lounge, if that makes sense.
It does. It does. I do think the retail footprint will shift. I think we'll have smaller retail units in larger lounges to be, I'm just being very honest, to accommodate. Listen, we're in a tourist market. Let's be honest about that. And so there needs to be space for tourists to come in and still have space and feel comfortable consuming, but also making sure that we have a space for locals that, for whatever reason, don't want to smoke in their homes, don't want to smoke around their kids or their parents and things of that nature, that they also have a space that feels safe and comfortable to consume and then go about their regular lives.
Well, when you're looking at kind of consumers, you had mentioned, and it's more than obvious, Clark County is definitely a tourism-driven tourism-driven area. When you're looking at, say, product diversification, you're looking at what consumer trends are. Obviously, consumer trends are very different in an area which doesn't have, for lack of a better word, transient. Population where people are just coming and going consistently. How do you, as an operator, kind of figure out what products, what SKU types that you should be stocking in order to accommodate? Obviously your locals, what they're going to want, what they're going to, pick up. But with so many people coming in and out of the area, how do you kind of prepare for that?
That's a really great question. A lot of data analysis. So not only looking at like what's currently driving performance at our dispensaries, but also looking at, I look a lot at West Coast metrics and seeing, what are the categories that are growing in other states near Nevada that maybe, we haven't taken advantage of in our buying strategy. I follow that very closely because that's usually an indicator that if we're missing out on either a SKU or maybe not investing into a product category in regards to making sure that there's new innovation in that category, that's an opportunity for us to grow also.
Well, and when you're taking a look kind of at these metrics, like what are you seeing right now? Like, especially in Clark County, like take for instance pre-rolls. Obviously, pre-rolls is a massively growing category. Like, are you seeing more dog walkers moving? Are you seeing more 0.5s moving? Are you seeing grams infused pre-rolls? Like, and has that consumer demand kind of surprised you?
Yes, I'll be very honest. The demand around pre-roll packs. So you mentioned the dog walkers, your Miss Grass, those the GLP Baby J's are right now, especially during the summer, extremely popular as people are, going out to different events and barbecues, and it's a convenience factor that, I'll be very honest, we invested heavily in pre-rolls and not as heavily in pre-roll packs. With the understanding of, people want a full, gram pre-roll. But really, what we found with consumers is they really enjoyed the convenience of being able to smoke a very quick 0.5 before they go out to their event, concert, festival throughout their life. And they still want to have a couple of mini pre-rolls with them just to maintain, that great feeling.
Sure. And one thing, as consumer mindsets are shifting away from THC kind of being the end all be all and moving towards terpenes, do you think that that 0.3 mentality might be also, hey, like I want to be able to hit green every single time I'm smoking a joint. Like I want to hit this, put it out, and not have to relight a joint. Do you think terpene preservation might be also maybe driving that smaller
I do.
pre-roll sale?
I do. I do. I'm at, coming from other states in which, terpenes aren't a focus at all, and then coming back to Nevada where the consumer is very educated on the entourage effect and they're very specific about what they are looking for in their flower. So for me, it was great to see because it just lets you know that all of the, foundation education that started in the medical market still persists in an adult use market. And a lot of people think that, whatever with adult use, that it's just a recreational. And it's like, no, there's still the medical aspect of it that consumers are that really resonate with consumers.
Well, and as you're looking at kind of the expansion of terpenes kind of being that that forefront for the driver of the effect, how, again, especially since Clark County is very, very tourist driven, like how much are you seeing people ask more about terpene profiles versus, say, people still sticking to the age old adage of like, I want the biggest THC percentage with the lowest price point?
I would say it's a pretty even mix. So we do get a lot of consumers coming in, and, you know, myrcene is, I would say, the number one terp request. So we still, I would say 50% of our consumers come in knowing exactly which terpenes, you know, work best for them, which ones to avoid for anxiety reasons. And then we still have the consumers that just want to get as lit as possible for the lowest price.
Do you see that consumer trend shifting over time? Do you think that that's eventually going to give away?
I do. You can already see it even with, I hate saying, we value consumers. They are, you know, looking for the best narrative. I'm trying to think of how to properly articulate this. So we do have a lot of value consumers coming in, and it's not just THC and it's not just price point. It's the combination of everything. Yes, I want a $25 eighth. I would like, you know, a THC percentage over 1920, but I also want to make sure that it has a really robust terpene profile. And we are starting to see that shift where the value eighth isn't driving traffic anymore. It really has to be a story to the consumer, in which in this environment, they want to feel like, yes, I got the best value for that $25 eighth. And they, you know, I hate to say it, but, you know, terpene profiles that have, you know, 2 milligrams, 3 milligrams, they aren't moving even at a sharp price point, even with the high THC.
And so, you know, when you're looking at this consumer trend, do you feel like this is going to be, especially considering the fact that, you know, you guys are so, you know, knowledgeable on your own plants, and you guys make sure your bud tenders are very knowledgeable on your plants. Do you see, since Clark County is very transitory, that consumers might come here, get some education, maybe spread that throughout wherever they're going? Do you see, like, I guess more the question is, do you see locations such as Los Angeles, and Las Vegas, and now that we have adult use in New York, New York City, do you see these like major metropolitan areas as kind of helping change that consumer mentality as to what they should be looking for?
Yes, I do. You know, post-COVID, people got out and started traveling a lot. So we do have a lot of people that come in and say, you know, this is what I got in LA. Is it available here? But also, this is, you know, what I learned during my shopping trip in LA, or what I learned during my shopping trip in New York. And then they are applying that knowledge when they come in and shop here in Nevada. And I think it's wonderful to see, because you're just growing the industry. You're introducing more consumers to the power of the plant.
Well, and especially, you know, being somebody from Los Angeles initially, now moving into the Clark County area, you know, I was very surprised that growing, you can't do that here within 25 miles of a state licensed facility. At that point for locals, do you feel like trying to find specific ways in order to like find that brand new flavor that they've never tried before, or something that maybe they've seen another market that they want to get something close to here, but they can't necessarily grow it themselves? How much have you seen as far as strain, say, pairing, where you're like, hey, you know, I tried this in this market, you know, because obviously all Blue Dreams aren't Blue Dreams, but you're like, hey, you know, like I tried a lemon cherry gelato, for instance, like in the New York market. Maybe you don't have it here in this, well, I mean, I know you have it here in the Southern Nevada market, but for instance, you know, is there a way that you guys kind of figure out, okay, well, I know that this product over here has maybe this specific terp profile, or I already have this specific knowledge around this plant. So I'm going to direct you in this direction.
Correct. Yes, we do get that quite a bit. Always very exciting because, for us, especially coming from other markets and that maybe not hearing of emerging strains, it's always great. And then we go online and we research and we figure out, okay, what do we have on our shelves that has a similar profile to what the customer's requesting? And I think that's really the great thing about cannabis is that, you may have wanted a gelato that you got out of Miami, medical dispensary, and a consumer could come in and say, it had 6 milligrams of caryophyllene and 4 milligrams of myrcene. And we're like, okay, and what did it taste like? And how did it smoke? And we ask those questions so that we can find something on our shelves that it's similar in effect and strain so that you leave happy.
Well, and looking at, the Nevada market, and especially considering you guys have your own subsidiary brands, how much do you guys kind of see? I mean, obviously on the retail side, you said you were looking at a lot of West Coast metrics. From the genetic side, and when you guys are trying to see kind of what strains are going to become popular and what things that you maybe should be introducing, how does that R&D process kind of happen? Like, do you guys have people that are, I mean, obviously Aaron went to Spanibus, you're looking at genetics over there. When you're kind of taking this approach, like, how does that R&D process work for you guys?
That's a really great question. A couple of different ways. We will have meetings and, there's feedback that we get from our store teams that I can pass on to Irene, who runs our cultivation. It's a very timely question because we were just having a conversation last night about some R&D that we're doing and, possibly attaining some new strains and starting to test those out and trying to figure out which new strains, I like to a collaborative brainstorm. But also it gets very, it's very funny when a retail person and then a cultivation director is having a conversation because they have a very different approach when it comes to pheno. For me, I'm like, okay, what has a high yield? What's high testing with a healthy terp profile? And from the cultivation side, it's more like, okay, plant health and nutrients and things of that nature that I'm not as well versed in. We're trying to marry the two together to make sure that we have a robust enough R&D program that we can meet demand down the line. We do look a lot at West Coast seed banks, just being very, very honest. A, because we have found that they are more knowledgeable about growing in particularly this environment, which can be very, very dry.
Yeah, extremely dry. And I mean, you guys have definitely created some great SOPs in order to make sure that doesn't necessarily affect your plants, especially throughout the process. I visited your guys's production facility as well as your packaging and manufacturing facility a couple weeks ago. So, seeing kind of how you guys are creating your SOPs on that side is just absolutely phenomenal. When you guys are creating internal SOPs for the retail side, how often do you kind of look at your standard operating procedures and say, like, oh, I've noticed maybe this, or I've noticed this, like, let's try this and see if we can either get a higher, market basket attachment, or how often do you kind of look at your SOPs and reevaluate
All the time,
everything?
all the time. In fact, I just had a meeting this morning with our trainer, and all the time we're constantly looking at SOPs. And it's really, the one thing that I really enjoyed about The Source, and the number one reason that I joined The Source was because they truly cared about their employees. So a lot when we're looking at that, we're taking in feedback from the staff on what are their obstacles during the day and how do we mitigate that so that they can really focus on the customer.
When you're looking at, say, POS systems, obviously the point of sale is one of the most complicated systems in a retail environment. But it can also be your greatest friend. Like, when you guys were picking out your guys's retail systems, and you guys were deciding on which POS system to eventually go with, like, how did you guys kind of figure out, which one to go with, and how often do you look at the market at other POS systems to see if that's still the right decision?
Quite a bit. So at least once a quarter, I'll do kind of a scan of other POS systems and seeing if there's anything out in the market that, you know, would greater meet our needs. When selecting though, you know, we are a 5-unit dispensary right now, and we're quickly growing. So the number one thing is like, does it have enterprise capabilities to where we can set up, you know, coupons, loyalty programs that apply at each unit without having to individually go in and make changes to the POS system? We test a lot of functionality with our team and sandbox environments and making sure that it works for them. I want to involve our frontline staff as much as possible because it is their job every single day. They're 8 hours working with that system. So it is key that they test it and provide feedback. We have a great community. We currently use Dutchie formerly LeafLogic, and we have great communication with them and, you know, always asking for features or, you know, can we approve upon this? And they're very, very open. And that I would say is the other priority in selecting a POS is making sure that you have a great relationship with the development team so that you have a POS that actually meets your needs.
And how often do you guys, considering you guys have a kind of an evolving need, how often do you guys talk with, say, the team over at Dutchie to see kind of from a development perspective, you know, hey, you know, these are the kind of the things that we're experiencing. You know, what are some ways that you can help us out?
We have about 2 meetings a month, which is great. And then we take in feedback from not only, you know, our retail teams, but also our compliance team, because compliance is key out here in Nevada. And, you know, what are some of the things that they think could be, you know, easier? We were just having a conversation with Dutchie yesterday about some features for cycle counting, just to make sure that, you know, we have a very robust cycle counting program that we do every day at the dispensaries, but how do we make it easier for the staff?
Well, and definitely the tech is probably 50% of the struggle with the retail. And then the other 50%, in my opinion, at least on the hardest side, is the staff and making sure you have the right staff, the right bud tenders. That's your first point of contact with the consumer. And especially considering you guys have subsidiary brands, I mean, it's the first point of contact with your potential future and lifetime consumer. So when you guys are doing your onboarding, you guys are deciding kind of, hey, you know, I want to make sure I'm getting the right bud tenders in place or the right, you know, managers in place. What are some things that you guys look for from potential applicants, and how do you kind of weed through, say, the stack of applications that I'm sure come through?
You know, that's a really great question. So we do have a recruiter that we use who kind of combs through all the resumes that come in per position, then has a very long list of candidates that he feels may be a great culture fit for the organization. And I sometimes hesitate saying culture fit because that could be a very, you know, loaded word, but it's really just understanding, does this person have ambition? Are they passionate about joining the industry? Because a lot of people want to join the industry because it seems cool, but maybe don't quite have the passion for the plant and for plant medicine that we would like to see in anyone that works for us. We do think it's important to have a healthy respect for the plant. And so that's really the number one thing that we look for. It's not just about wanting to join the industry for the discount or to have more product. It's like, do they have a real passion to improve lives?
And you know, I mean, I kind of mentioned what I think are the biggest challenge for retailers, but you know, for you, obviously I'm not a retailer. I'm not operating on a daily basis. From your perspective, what do you feel like is the biggest challenge for retailers, regardless of the market? But what do you feel like is the biggest challenge for retailers currently in this environment?
It's staying in touch with the consumer. So there are a lot of companies in which the decision-making happens in a boardroom with a lot of data, but not quite the level of input from frontline staff. I think here we've been able to incorporate a model that really prioritizes that feedback, sometimes over the data, because they are touching the customer every single day. And it's like, okay, if I'm hearing this at every visit to every dispensary that I go to, that there's something there, whether it's our check-in process is too long. That's, I'll be very honest, something that we're, you know, trying to resolve right now, because that's a feedback that we've gotten. And you can't really see that in the data from, you know, transaction history or consumers or even surveys. It's just budtenders are saying, hey, I'm getting a lot of complaints that our check-in process is too long. The wait times are too long.
Well, what do you, I mean, especially in a growing market that's growing as fast as Las Vegas is, or Clark County in general is, obviously you have a massive influx of a local population moving in on top of all of the people who are just coming in and out as tourists. How does a retailer with set square footage help manage that? Like, what is a way, in your opinion, that somebody could, because obviously you're going to get more and more people coming in. Like, that's not going to slow down. So how do you help manage that, in your opinion?
Looking for other ways to service the customer that don't necessarily require a physical budtender, you know, marketing heavy into e-com, marketing heavy into delivery, you know, increasing the convenience factor at all of our dispensaries. Like, what does our in-store pickup look like? We, you know, started installing express lines at all of our locations for customers who maybe don't want to speak to a budtender, but I know exactly what two pre-rolls that I want. So I'm going to go directly to the express line. It's looking at new technology for, you know, ID verification. I have a great relationship with Veriscan. We had a conversation 2 weeks ago on, you know, what's on their roadmap, what can help us reduce our wait times at dispensaries. And especially, you know, I hate to say it, starting that conversation now before Green Wednesday, when we know, you know, wait times are going to be double, triple what they currently are.
Yeah. And speaking onto that, when you're looking at, say, holidays, so many holidays now in cannabis, obviously 420, the biggest holiday, the one coming up most expeditiously, obviously 7/10. When you're a retailer and you're trying to prepare for some of these holidays, what are some things that you do to get kind of out in front of, you know, say the marketing, making sure product is kind of aligned with what you expect to sell on that holiday? Because obviously 7/10 is a more hash heavy holiday. What are some things that you do as an operator in order to make sure that you're prepared?
First and foremost, you know, making sure that all of my key stakeholders understand we need to start the planning process now. For example, we have already started our planning process for Green Wednesday. We know it's a big holiday for us. So it's okay, marketing, how do we want to theme Green Wednesday? When do we want to release our promos? How are we going to message to consumers? But I will be very honest, more importantly, it's speaking to the buying team, who are the vendors that we are going to be identifying that we most definitely want to ensure that we have Green Wednesday partnerships, whether it's an exclusive drop off product, whether it's, you know, supporting us on our promotional activity. It's understanding the brands that drive consumers into our location and then making sure that we are communicating to them what our needs will be around the holiday first before the rest of the market starts to solidify their plans.
Well, I'm a big fan of cannabis holidays, 100%. When you're kind of looking at some of these holidays, especially as social consumption comes online in Nevada, do you see an evolution in the marketing and how these holidays are kind of celebrated in the Las Vegas region as these social use lounges come online? Like, you know, will 420 be more than just, you know, getting a simple discount at the store? Like, what will the future of retail and social licensing and social consumption look like in Southern Nevada?
I do think some of these holidays will turn into more of an event versus more of a, you know, dispensary specific promotional holiday. For instance, I think 420 next year with the lounges that will be open will be much bigger than the last 2 years of 420s that we've had, because people will actually be able to consume on site. And that's going to be huge for that holiday.
Yeah. I am excited.
Yes,
So, wait. Okay. So, I obviously I don't want to take up too much more of your time. Again, I really appreciate the time you've given. When you're looking at the future of the Source, what does kind of the future rollout of the Source look like for you guys? Are you guys going to eventually go out of state, or are solidifying the Nevada market? Obviously, you guys are killing it here. What's the future for you guys?
Definitely opening more locations here in Nevada, first and foremost. We do have two additional licenses that we're hoping to open by Q2 of 2024. And then lots and lots and lots of product innovation, making sure that we are keeping our assortment, especially our internal product lines, new and fresh to the consumer. And overall, I would say we've operationally really increased our focus on training, on standardization, on, and development of our staff, because really we are focused right now on creating cannabis leaders. Whether they stay with the source or not, we are focused on developing leaders.
Well, and I think that's a wonderful way to look at it. Definitely need more educated people moving into cannabis, people who are definitely thought leaders in the space, who are moving that paradigm forward. Really look forward to you guys introducing your wickless vape
Yes.
very soon, and absolutely cannot even close to explain how excited I am about the ice cream coming out. So.
Same.
Awesome. Sequoia, really appreciate everything. We would like to thank Sequoia for her time and being on today's episode. If you would like to find out more about The Source, please visit them online at www.thesourcenv.com. That'll do it for us today. Make sure to stay tuned to the next episode here on Conversations in Cannabis.